Next, also for Rock Creek, we have Joe G.
All right, my name's Joe. Leading up to this, I know Joanna, we go to some meetings together, and leading up to this, there was an argument going on about who would go first, because I know her to be so passionate about recovery, and I don't feel that I can possibly show you that I'm anywhere near that passionate, and I'm probably not, you know, I'm probably not. I believe in the anonymity of Narcotics Anonymous, and what it means to me is that we're all equal, and we're not all the same. And my story is quite different from Joanna's. I didn't get here until I was 46 years old, and that was after 30 years of using. I'm 73 now. I came around for about 9 months, almost a year, and went to meetings regularly because y'all said keep coming back. The end of my using was pitiful. It wasn't really very dramatic. I'd already been in prison for a while, not for very long, but for long enough to understand what prison's about. And I got out, and the first thing I wanted to do was go back to using. So, you know, that's where I was. It was pitiful. It was really sad compared to what I had been doing. One of the topics we're dealing with is just for today, and I can tell you that from the time I was 16 until I was 46, there was no just for today. There was only about an obsession with supply. Whether it was supply of legal drugs, the right kind, the right amount, how much it cost, how much I could have, how much I could hold, or illegal drugs, which I didn't find until I was a little bit older than most people. I was about 23 in the Air Force in Southeast Asia when I finally came upon illegal drugs. And then it was really a question of, how do I maintain supply? There's no just for the day in that. There's like all kinds of obsession and crazy thoughts. And now I know what was going on is my dis-ease of addiction. I call it a dis-ease because that's where it shows up in my head. I'm uneasy. I'm uneasy. Will I have enough for tomorrow? Can I get some for next week? What's it going to smell like, taste like, look like, etc.? How much is it going to cost? Blah, 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 blah. It just goes on forever then. Now, I still have that dis-ease. It's just focused on those little yellow mangoes. I've got to have those little yellow mangoes, and I can't wait, go to the store, and find that they're there. No, I've got to get a case, and hope that I can eat them all before they go bad. Right now, I've got four going bad in the upstairs room. So the obsession is still there. It's just a little bit more healthy than it used to be. So what's happened to me is that, you know, eventually it was a pitiful situation. I got clean. I had a sponsor when I was going to meetings regularly and still using. He didn't like that. He thought that was a bad idea. And he saw that I was continuing to hold a job, that I was continuing to go to meetings regularly. He pulled me aside one day and said, I don't think we can continue this relationship because if you can use and do as well as you're doing, that I might get the wrong idea and start using too. He said, would you like me to find somebody for you? And I gave him a name, and he didn't like the name. The reason I gave him that name was because this guy had come around Narcotics Anonymous from 1976 to 1984 before he could get a year clean. So I thought, this guy Johnny G knows something I need to find out. So I got him to be my sponsor, and after changing my clean date a few times, I managed to stop and stay stopped, join the Don't Use No Matter What club, and start working some steps. In my fourth step, I found out that this dis-ease of addiction of mine doesn't have anything to do with drugs. The drugs channeled it. The drugs had an effect on it, and I wasn't using when I was 6 years old. And I know from my fourth step that attitude, that state of mind, those kinds of thoughts, those kinds of schemes, those kind of plans were there from the time I was 6 years old. Whatever I was told not to do, that's what I wanted to do. Whatever I was told was dangerous, I wanted to try it. The problem was, though, that I was full of self-centered fear. It wasn't so much that I was afraid to try those dangerous things as it was that I didn't want you to see me being afraid. And just like with the mangoes, that's still there today. I do not want you to see me being afraid of anything. And I'm afraid of a lot of things. Self-centered fear is still with me. It's one of the things I work on just for today on a daily basis. So anyway, I'm working with this guy, Johnny G, and he sponsored me, and he doesn't have a car, and I do, so we're in the car all the time. Pick me up here, we're going to this meeting, and that's what I'm doing. And he hates my job. I've got a job. He hates my job. What I'm doing is I'm doing fundraising for a nonprofit. It doesn't matter which one. He sees clearly that what I'm really doing is raising money to pay my salary. I don't see anything really wrong with that. You know, he does. And he tells me the only time he's ever seen me smile is when I'm talking about boats or fishing. Now, where does that come from? You know, when I was concerned about supply of illegal drugs in 1973, the only solution I could see was to get out of the Air Force, go to graduate school, you know, in other words, cop a plea and take VA money to go to school and start smuggling marijuana. So I found some like-minded people and I did that. It seemed reasonable to me that what I was doing with this nonprofit was pretty much the same thing. You know, I was doing a service to the public. We thought we were doing a service to the public when we were bringing in marijuana. I don't know. You go figure. Maybe we were, maybe we weren't. Who knows? I know I was doing a service to me, and that's what I thought about the job. So he said, the only time that you smile is when you're talking about boats or fishing, and that's where that came from, the boats and fishing. I'd been on boats since I was a little kid. I was born in Florida, raised in Florida in part, and so that's when I smiled. So he said, you put on your costume, whatever that looks like, you go out and knock on doors until somebody gives you a job in that field. And I thought he was full of shit. I thought he was crazy as a shithouse mouse. I really did. He was not crazy. He was not crazy. I went looking for a way to get licensed by the Coast Guard. Now, I'm a convicted felon. How's that going to happen? But I went for a way to look for it because I had some amount of faith in God, the God of my understanding. So I went looking for it. I helped somebody move a boat from the Keys up to Fort Lauderdale. I rented a car, went up to Stuart, Florida, where there's a school for people who want to do what I wanted to do, a school. I thought that's the way to get any place in life would be go to school, to intellectualize it, to write stuff down in a book about it, and then I would be okay. And when I got up there, I went to a meeting. I went to a noon meeting held in a bar in Howard Johnson's. And I told those people why I was there. And after the meeting, a guy pulled up on me and he said, I just got kicked out of the Coast Guard. you want to go get something to eat? So we went to a cafe and he explained to me that I didn't need any kind of schooling at all. What I needed to do was get serious about this. Get on a boat, no matter how, and get some time. And I'd be okay, because one thing he was sure of, the Coast Guard knew about impaired people. And I understood that too, because there were some impaired people involved in drug smuggling. Always has been, and probably always will be. No matter what the Homeland Security says. Anyway, so that's what I did. I went back I got a job in the marine industry, pissed around, did this and did that. Finally, I had enough time on the water so I could try and get the license. This is all about getting out of my way and letting God do God's work. Because Johnny Green told me that when you go to apply for a job, they're not hiring you. They don't know why they're hiring you. It's God's work. God's doing the work. God's hiring you when you get a job. And I kind of, okay, well, I'll try that out. So I put all the paperwork in. And I'm sitting in my house one afternoon. I was working temps. And if I didn't get a job by 8:30, I didn't have anything else to do. Phone rings, and it's Petty Officer so-and-so from the Baltimore Regional Examination Center. He says, we've got a problem with your application. I said, yeah, I bet you do. He said, is it true that you're a convicted felon? I said, yes, it is. Is it true that you've had trouble with drugs in the past? I said, yes, it is. He said, can you prove that you were convicted? Can you send us some paperwork so we can put it in your file? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe. I'll call my parole officer and see if he's still working. So, I called him. He was still working. He didn't really understand what they wanted, but he sent them some paperwork. Sent them the case file from my conviction. And the guy that called me that day on the phone, he said, don't worry about it, just do it. And that's kind of what Johnny Green had been telling me for a long time. Don't worry about it, just do it. So I did. And the next phone call I got was to come on up here and take your exam. So I did. And that was 1993. And since then, I've had two jobs. One for 15 years and the current one for, let's see, 9 or 10 years, something, 9 and a half years. When I wonder about whether I can live in just for the day, I think about what it was like to do those jobs I've had for the past 24 years. And I realized that on a boat, in any water, no matter what the weather, no matter what the job is, there's only one way to live, in the moment. I can't predict what's going to happen next out there. Whether it's a river, an ocean, a creek, a lake, doesn't matter. I can't predict what's going to happen next. And that's the other thing about my dis-ease. I always wanted to know what's it going to be like when I get there. Nobody ever told me. Nobody will tell me what's it going to be like when I get there. How can you live like that? With Narcotics Anonymous, that's how I've been able to live like that. I've been able to work on not knowing what it's going to be like when I get there and going on anyway. You know, just showing up. I dance around and wave my hands, but I don't look good doing that. That was very unspiritual. All I wanted was a laugh. So anyway, that's the only way I can really focus, really grasp hold of this just for today concept, this just living in the moment concept. You know, if y'all have been with me for the last, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 days, whatever it was, particularly last night, if y'all have been with me and in my head, you'd have heard all this that I'm saying now. Because I've been going over and over and over and over. It's just like, it's crazy. You know, it's really not why I go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings. It's one of the things Joanna was talking about. It's really not why I open my mouth in Narcotics Anonymous meeting. To be cool, hip, slick, or cool. That was my problem for my whole life. Trying to be hip, slick, and cool. Trying to hide my fear. Trying to hide my discomfort. And that's, I don't go to Narcotics Anonymous meetings to look good or get laughs. I'm not good at that. You know, I'm not really a convincing guy. A guy named Gavin T. pulled up on me. He's the chair of one of the meetings I go to regularly, and he kind of whined me into doing this today. Because just like Joanna, I don't like this stuff. I don't do well at it, and I don't like it. So I work on it. You know, that's the only thing I can do. I can show up and work on it. I can do better. I can be more honest. I can be more truthful. And like I said, anonymity means to do, we're all equal, but we're not all the same. And I am definitely not the same. I got here late in life. I won't say that I had a lot of fun or joy while I was out there using. I will say there was not a horror story until right at the end. Until right at the end, it was not a horror story. When the agents came and took me away and told me I had been indicted, it wasn't a horror story. It wasn't a big scene. It was just quietly depressing, just quietly pitiful, you know. And I went through that with some amount of dignity, and I'm trying to go through this with some amount of dignity. In 2013, I got kind of a wild hair. I had an itch in my back on the left side around my shoulder blade. I don't know what possessed me to do it, but I went to my primary care doctor. I have a wife who's fully employed and has been the whole time I've been using. And she has insurance, thank God. So I went to my primary care doc and asked him to order a CT for me. And he did, and I went and got it in October of 2013. And when the report came back, they said they found a nodule. N-O-D-U-L-E. What the fuck is a nodule? I didn't know what a nodule was, so I kind of sat on it for a while, and my wife happens to be a registered nurse, and I mentioned it to her, and she said, you ought to go see a pulmonologist. So I did. He ordered some more imaging, and they found a tumor. Go figure. A nodule is a tumor. Why don't they just fucking call it a tumor? What the fuck's wrong with these people? They don't want us to know what's going on. So they did. They found this tumor. They went in and took it out. They took some lymph nodes out in February of 2014. In July of 2014, they went in and took out the lower left lobe of my lung. And when they pulled out, you know, they stick a lot of holes in you when they do that stuff. And when they pulled out, they left some leaks in my chest wall. So August 26th of 2014, they had to go back in and take a piece of muscle, two pieces of muscle really, wrap them around and patch my chest wall. So I'm really uncomfortable these days. But you know what? I'm uncomfortable, I have the disease of addiction, and I'm alive standing here. So it's not all bad. It's not all bad. I went July this year, no, wait, what's that? July of last year, and got scanned again, and that was clean. I don't go again until July of this year. And, you know, as I approach July, I get these twitches and feelings, and my brain goes and says, oh, you're over, you're going to die, it's all over. God, you got it again, it's spread all over your body. And I don't know anything that's true. You know, who knows what the... Who knows? Who the fuck knows what's true? If I get two more years, they'll call me cancer-free. Do I get a big lollipop? Do I get to use drugs then? Because honestly, you know, you talk about reservations. The reservation I've had and I have held on to throughout my time in Narcotics Anonymous is if I know that this is it, I want a big hit. I think I hear some of you saying, yes, that's true for me too. I don't know, man. I don't know what the titter's about. So I've had that reservation, but you know what? Through all those surgeries, I went through a pain medication regimen, and I was able to do it with some degree of grace. And the way I did that was to continue constant contact with my sponsor, who has a sponsor, who has a sponsor, all of whom have a working relationship with the 12 steps, as do I. Stay in touch with them. Go to the same meetings that I had attended before I went in the hospital, the same meetings regularly, with the help of other people coming to pick me up. And, you know, I never knew how many friends I had until I started asking for rides. It's just fucking amazing. The only thing bad about it is that when you get rides from people, it means you have to give rides to people. And I'm really, you know, kind of stingy about that. I got a car with a small back seat. And that's, you know, honest to God, that's because I don't want to carry a bunch of people with me. Still isolating after all these years. You know, what can I say? So let's see if I've covered. Oh. I don't know about this daily reprieve thing because I know where it comes from. I have enough experience with books that aren't basic to know that it's supposed to be a daily reprieve based on my spiritual condition. And honest to God, I'm not sure I have a spiritual condition. I do show up, I do believe in a power greater than me who is caring, loving, and greater than me, and I do believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know if what I do is meditation or not. I don't know if what I do is prayer or not. I do know that it's worked for me. I do know I'm still standing here clean. Let's see. 10,049 days. And I know how I did that. I did not use, and I did not die. And that's all I did. That's all I did to get that clean time. Whether I've got a whole bunch of recovery or not, I really don't know. You know, I'm much more able to judge others' recovery than I am my own. And I do. And I see some of you do too. And I don't give a shit if you judge me. You can go ahead and judge me all you want. Because I may end up in 2 years cancer-free. Get a lollipop. Get a lollipop. All I really want to do, honestly, all I really want to do is make it to July 13th of this year. In July 13th of this year, I will have been married to the same woman for 50 fucking years. How could she possibly do that? She is either a saint or a very sick woman. It has been getting better. You know, she has a fellowship of her own. And so we do our best to mind our own business. I mind my business, she minds hers. Most of the time. And then, you know, if I make it to that day, I'll consider myself a success. Although, if I can make it to 80, I'd be glad for that too. Okay, enough of this crap. I'm just kind of stringing it out now. I think I've covered just for today. I think I've told you that I have been managing to get out of my own way from time to time. And I don't know about the daily reprieve thing again because I don't know exactly what my spiritual condition is. If somebody out there has a spiritual condition meter, I'd be glad to talk to them after this is over. And thank you so much for letting me share.